You're listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio. Thanks for tuning into RCR, Reality Check Radio. The following interview contains topics that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. If you would like to contact us in regards to any of our content, please email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. That's inbox@realitycheck.radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Remember, you can send us a text at 2057. Email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We've got a pre-record now with the wonderful Katrina Biggs. It's in two parts. I hope you enjoy it. I enjoyed talking to her so much. Here's part one. Here's a funny story. This next guest I wanted to interview for a long time because I'd seen her comments on X and her Substack. Loved it. She asked to interview me. So we agreed to do this show, and it's sort of going to be, we're going to try it, a bit of interviewing of each other, a bit of a mutual fan club. It's Katrina Biggs, and she's been a great women's right activist, particularly dealing with the Christchurch City Council. As I said, she's on X, and she writes a Substack blog, and it's called Bold Woman, but there's a twist to it. It's B'Old Woman, and it's all about gender ideology. Good morning to you, Katrina.
Hi, Rodney. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
It's funny that you wanted to interview me.
Well, look, I was intrigued when I heard you. I can't remember who you were interviewing last month, but you talked about your daughter. I think it was your daughter had gone into a changing room somewhere or toilets and come out and said that there was a man in there. And
not
that was
quite.
Just.
It wasn't quite that bad, but it was bad. The biggest shock to me was that she knew what was going on. So here's how it happened. We're at Sumner Beach. No, not Sumner Beach. What's the beach? Oh, God, it'll come to me in Christchurch. Brighton Beach. Mm-hmm. And my little girl then was 9, so it was 2 or 3 years ago. And my little son was, I don't know, 6 or 7. And there were changing sheds sort of on the, just back from the beach. Nice changing sheds. Now, what I don't know is whether they were unisex or not, but the shed was like only one person. You locked it and you went in. And my little daughter was waiting to go in, and my little boy was waiting to go into the other one, and they were both being used. And the door opened, and out came this enormous man, right? He was enormous, and he had a big black beard, right? Mm. And he was in a woman's skirt with lipstick and makeup on, right?
Yeah.
And my little son just stared at this guy, right? What the hell, right? You know how kids have no, like, it was
no filter.
No, it was an embarrassing stare, and his eyes were on saucers. Like, here's this huge, he looked like he could have been, you know, a lock in the All Blacks, and a big bushy beard and lipstick and long eyelashes and makeup.
Crikey. I live in Christchurch and I haven't seen him around. I have to admit.
No, he might have been visiting. Anyway, my eyes were as big as saucers too, to be honest. But I knew to, you know, I knew to sort of look out of the side of my eye. Anyway, my little girl, what was she? She's 11 now, 9, maybe 8, even 9. She knocked my son and said, "Don't stare, don't stare. He's trans."
Oh, so she already had
and
that.
And I'm thinking, how the hell? I was wondering what the hell it was, right?
And she had to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And told my son not to stare, that he was trans. So it wasn't, they weren't in the changing room together. But I've used that as an example when writing to our local mayor, saying she was a bit upset by it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what the hell? And so I've used it to say, you know, what I wrote to the local mayor in Queenstown. This is probably how it came up. And I said, he was all about inclusion and celebrating pride and and inclusion. I said, well, tell me, does your inclusion include letting men in a skirt into the changing sheds and toilets with my daughters? Because they said they've had that experience and it was pretty traumatic, mainly for me. And you know what he wrote back? It's just, these people are nuts. He wrote back and said, oh, I've noted your comment.
Yeah. Look, they're great at stonewalling you. And I've had the same experience with the council here. They write stuff back in Christchurch. They write stuff back and you look at it in disbelief and think, how can they even think that that's a valid comment, that you're going to believe it, that you're going to buy it? Yeah, and they do. I think they have a template of comments or responses and they just go and pick one and flick it on back to you.
How did you get into this?
Some time ago, it was right back in October 2021, I think, when somebody advised me that the Lynwood Pool, as a new pool complex in Christchurch, had a women's session, and they had prior to opening the pool, the council had asked for community feedback about what they'd like, and they'd have an overwhelming request for a women's session in the pool. So they said, yeah, sure. And I did an OAA, an Official Information Act request, and they did say that there'd been, I think, one or two requests for a men's session, but, you know, there really wasn't any appetite for it.
Yeah.
But the woman really wanted one. And so they said, yes, you know, so far so good. And apparently on opening day, the mayor at the time, Leanne Dalzell, then announced that it was also included people who identify as being women. So in other words, men, because who identifies as being a woman apart from a man? A woman is just a woman, you know. And so I started engaging with the Christchurch City Council then, and I was pretty naive, to be honest, about how you went about things and how you advocated and all that sort of stuff. But they were obdurate. They were absolutely obdurate that they were not going to change that. They had a meeting with them on Zoom. A few other women came together and we had a meeting with them. And
so you met on Zoom with the council?
With the recreation, I think it's, I can't remember his full title, but he's the recreation manager. They had their lawyer there.
No!
They had their lawyer there.
My God.
Yeah. And their answer, that if we wanted a woman-only session, then we would have to book one privately and like as a group and just have it privately. But publicly, no, they were going to keep including men who say they're women in that session. And that was it. There was no moving them. And that is how they've remained to date. There's no budging them. They have this policy and that's it. So that's why I'm interested in hearing other people's stories, Rodney. Because,
well, outside of the conflicts we're seeing around the world, but even then I think they pale. I regard this gender ideology as the gravest threat to our society ever.
I would have to sort of tend to agree. I agree along the same lines anyway, because it's breaking down so many boundaries.
Yes.
But there are no boundaries to it.
No.
To gender ideology. They just There's keep none. Going and going and going, and the demands just develop on the hoof almost.
And there's no argument or debate.
No, it's that's what I've noticed too. You know, it's basically it's social engineering from, you know, with government, councils, that sort of thing. And they shut down any debate just with insults and name calling or a template letter.
I'm just looking up Leanne Dalzell. I was trying to remember when she was mayor.
I think she stepped down in the election after that, and we had
She's mayor from 2013 to 2022. I didn't realise she'd lasted so long.
Yeah, she had quite a long run, actually, and we've got this crusty old...
She's one of these women, because I know her, and I quite enjoyed her, but you know how you meet these very intelligent people who are completely screw-iff on how the world works?
Yeah, they don't get out enough, really, do they?
No, or they get out too much. I don't know.
Well, they certainly get out in their own circles. I know that. And they meet with other elites.
Did you ever think that they might have a point?
About
leading
what?
Men into the spaces who think they're women?
Oh, look, way back, you know, like some years ago, I was like, oh, well, you know, what's the harm? It's just a few of them. They're just these poor, vulnerable men who want to, you know, a safe place to go to, you know, a bit casual about it. And if they've been taking hormones, then it makes them just like women. I was like that, you know.
So and you're a wee bit lefty.
Oh, yes, I was, you know. And I tell you, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm a vegan, Rodney. And I mean,
well, you look a very, I can see you. You look a wonderfully healthy one.
Thank you. And I mean, I've basically been frosted out of vegan groups because
a lefty thing, right? Being a vegan.
Pretty much, yeah. But you know, I mean, now maybe we've got a lot more sort of centrist or right leaning vegans in there than we used to be.
Yeah. So you're not a conservative person by history.
No, I'm not a history, but I consider myself sort of centrist now because sometimes I still have my, you know, my lefty sort of stance on thing. But now I can also see a very good case for conservative stance on things as well. The conservative stance I can see is holding the line, and we need that. And also, you know what the line is. You know where people are coming from. You know what they do and don't believe. You know, I know what I'm up against if I'm, you know, if I'm with right-wing people. I know that. Left, it's all up in the air now. You don't know.
Well, I was always, from my early 20s, a free market libertarian and an atheist. I'm still a free market libertarian, but I'm now a Christian.
Okay.
And I'm learning hard and reading the Bible, and it's gender ideology that's shifted me.
Ah, well, that's interesting, isn't it? And I can see in some ways why, because I can't remember who said it, but somebody said there's like a God-shaped hole in our lives now, when people who, religion was very important in people's lives in times gone by, and now that we have moved away from that, it's like, what do we replace it with? It's almost like humans need something bigger than themselves to focus on or be a part of or something. And well, I can see that gender ideology would push you back into that.
Yes. Well, it's funny because it's tougher on me than that, because it's not a utilitarian thing that I have a hole in my society or my heart. It's actually, I know it's true.
Right.
How big a deal is that?
Okay.
To go from being an atheist to not believing in God, but to knowing it's true.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge, isn't it?
It's huge to me, and it's changed everything, changes how you see everything, becomes a more beautiful world, becomes a tougher world, because you have a big standard to live up to that you fall short of.
Well, that's one of the, I mean, personally, I consider myself agnostic, but I can understand what you're saying is that now you have values that you've got to live up to.
Yes.
And whereas before you could pick and choose them. Whatever.
Well, you see, I tell you how it went. I consider what they're teaching our children to be evil without a shred of argument in its favor. That this is the destruction of a child's innocence, and everything it is to be a child, for no upside.
Yeah.
And I also go further and I say, I have never even heard an argument in its favor.
Gender ideology?
Yeah.
Not really, just, no, apart from the fact abuse. That somehow it's supposed to make people who are confused, you know, children confused, are somehow supposed to make them feel better.
Yeah.
It only makes them feel better if everybody around them is saying, oh, you're wonderful, you're great, this is, you know, rah, 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 you know, glitter and balloons and everything like that. As soon as they're not getting all that affirmation and those accolades and everything like that, they don't, you know, they don't feel better. They haven't got, it does not make them feel better enough inside themselves to be able to go out into the world, and a world that doesn't believe it, and still be okay.
Yeah, well, I saw that as evil.
Yes, it's an indoctrination. Not in a biblical
sense, but just so obviously. But then I tried to talk to teachers, and I realized, literally, it was like talking with someone who's possessed.
When you say try to talk to teachers, you mean your children's teachers?
Yes. Or,
right, and they were very much on board with gender ideology and...
Didn't even think the young ones, under 40, I got a line, don't even think, like they can't even stand you at being asked.
Yes, I think you're right, isn't it? It's like they go into shock or they're something shocked. Like that, or immediately they get this... This flag comes up in their brain, like the devil's talking to them or something like that.
Devil's in them. That's where I got to. Yeah, well, can I tell you my journey?
Tell you your journey?
My journey into this.
No.
Do you want to hear? Because you're going to
interview me. Yeah, okay, go for it.
I'm busting to tell you.
Okay.
So I don't know what came first, but I watched Matt Walsh's What is a Woman?
Yes.
His very documentary. Good. My wife and I watched it. And our oldest daughter, who's now 13, was probably, I don't know, 11. Very mature for her age. Very, very mature. And she's on the sofa reading a book, but got half an eye and an ear on this. Well, we watched Matt Walsh's documentary, which I thought was tremendous, with alarm, amazement, laughter, because he's very funny. And then I concluded it and thought, God, America's mad. You know what I mean?
I know what's coming.
Thank God that wouldn't happen here.
Yeah.
Anyway, my daughter goes off to do a class project. And she says, I'm going to do one on Charlie Upham, BC and Bar. And I said, that's great. You need to read his book, the book about him, Mark of a Lion. But I'm not sure this is a thing to do these days. And she's always that. I said, I'm not sure that killing lots of Germans is something that we regard as a good thing these days. Oh, no, she said, I really want to learn about them, and this will be a good way. So she went off and she studied up about Charlie Upham. And his exploits, and how he was the only soldier to get a VC in bar, which is amazing. And that not only that he got two, but he deserved a lot more based on his exploits and unbelievable coolness. And the day came that she said, come in after school, and they've got all the projects on display. They had these sort of like boxes and dioramas, and I go in and I'm walking down the class, looking there. And I come across one with pride flags, bloody, how many, there's 76 genders or whatever it is.
That must have been a few years ago.
Yeah, this is, oh, there's a lot more now, is there?
Sure.
He was 11. And I said, what the hell's this? I was so shocked. They're 11.
Yeah, and they were doing this. Yeah.
11. And I said, what's going on here? And she says, oh, yeah, that's so-and-so. That gay.
At 11.
Yeah.
Right.
Turns out that in her year of 160, this is at Arrowtown Primary School, she reckoned there were 20 who were, what's it, non-binary.
Oh, wow. Wow. Mm. So tell me that's not learned, you know, from. Oh,
it's absolutely learned. Yeah. So, and of course, one of her friends identified as gay, and I said, what's that about? And so, well, she was bullied at a previous school, and she learnt that if you said you were gay, you sort of had some protection.
Ah, so there we go. She learned it.
Yeah, and special. Mm. Anyway, next thing is, they sent me an email saying they're going to do the health education. And I read it most carefully and thought, oh, that looks okay. But I wasn't awake because there's key words I've learned. And one of the words was, oh, and gender. If you see the word gender, that's a flag.
It is. Absolutely now. I mean, yeah, it, you that's know. A flag.
And they had gender. Oh, okay. You know, they're going to cover something about gender, whatever that is.
Mm.
Anyway, she came home from school that day. And this was, she was standard 5. I'm trying to work that out. Yes, 7. Yeah, yes, 7. And so, oh, we had all the stuff. It was all about, you know, trans. And I said, really? She said, yeah. And I said, what did you do? She said, oh, I was just laughing to myself. She never said it out loud. I wish she had have. She says, I was just laughing to myself about Matt Walsh and this teacher trying to explain it to us because I was thinking, oh, so that rooster over there could really be a hen, which is very funny for a kid to say if they said it in class. But she thought it.
Right. Oh, she would have been in trouble if she'd said it.
So that was pretty shocking to me. I didn't do anything because I thought, how can I? I tried to engage. No one's interested.
Mm.
Then she came home and said, Dad, you better sit down. So I sit down. She said, we had all these, in her words, quote, trans and lesbos come into the class.
Trans and lesbos.
She keeps accusing me of being transphobic, and I say I am, actually.
Yeah.
I should say, like you, I was always liberal on this.
Yeah.
And I used to attend occasionally when I was an MP, a trans meeting in Epsom electorate. And a lovely lady would hold a meeting in her house and she was, well, they say straight, heterosexual. But these trans ladies would meet, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and they'd invite me along. And it was just to talk about their issues. Mm. And I enjoyed it. They were lovely, actually.
Yeah.
And my heart went out to them. But they were the complete opposite of what we're dealing with today.
Yeah, absolutely.
These weren't people trying to force their way into women's spaces.
No. They wanted to be accommodated in society.
Yes.
But they weren't saying, oh, you must let us into women's spaces. Never. That's the only way it can be done.
Never.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed meeting them, and they were – like often people who have been on the fringe and prejudiced against, they were very warm. You know how sometimes out of that adversity, a great character is born. And I enjoyed them immensely in the sense of how wonderful they were. And some of them had suffered physically.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, and I knew Georgina Beyer very well.
we okay. used to dance together at charity functions, and she and I got on very well. And she was, and I do call her she was very not in your face to me. And she always told me that she wasn't a woman.
I call people by their proper pronouns only because of where we've got to now.
No, I'm the same. But back then I didn't care. She could call herself a parrot back then, because she wasn't forcing herself, literally her ideology, on you or your kids.
Yeah.
But they cross a line when they come for my kids.
Yeah.
Anyway, so my daughter came home. And she said all these trends and lesbos came into the school. And it's so outrageous to me that I actually think she's making it up for effect. And so I emailed her teacher and I said, you know what, what's going on? Oh, and the teacher said, oh, yeah, we had this group called Inside Out Visit.
Oh, here we go.
And these are these older teenagers who are all the colours of the rainbow.
These are the Inside Out people?
Yeah, and all the letters of the alphabet. And they turned up and had 2 hours with these 11-year-olds to talk about their lifestyle. 2 hours, compulsory education.
And why do people need to know, 11-year-olds know about trans people, lesbians, gays?
This is when I start to fall out of bed with it, right? I'm thinking, what on earth? Well, I do know why, because their argument is we've got to catch these kids before they hit puberty.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yes, that's right.
We've got to catch them before they hit puberty.
Mm.
God, this is so crazy, because they may be a bit confused and we need to reach out to them before puberty and put them on puberty blockers just so they can take some time.
Apparently, this is the great con, isn't it? Time to think,
con.
Or pause to think, or something like that. Where what you're doing is you're actually pausing their cognitive development.
Yes,
and so they can hardly progress past their 11-year-old thinking.
And I was watching this, and I thought, if this is happening in Arrowtown Primary School, it is happening everywhere.
Yeah.
And it is. People don't realise.
Oh, it is embedded everywhere. I mean, I think there's some schools that, you know, that if they have a really good principal,
yes,
they're not embedding it. But otherwise, I think that if a parent, you have to assume that it is embedded. You assume guilty before innocent, I think, about these schools in regards to this.
Then my daughter starts high school. And in the year before she starts, she goes off to sit a test for the school. And I'm driving home. I said, how was it? She was great. Oh, she said, you've got to know one thing, Dad. The teacher's handing out this exam script. And she's walking down the room and she says, now, if you identify as a boy, tick the boy box. If you identify as a girl, tick the girl box. If you're gender fluid, tick the non-identified box.
Wow.
That is, I said to my daughter, that is insane. She said, of course it is. I said, what do the other kids think? She said, Dad, you've got to understand, they know nothing else.
Because they haven't got parents or anyone else in their life talking anything about it. To the contrary of what they're
they
learning.
Don't know. The parents don't know.
No.
So my experience is half the parents I talk to are shocked by it but don't believe me.
Mm.
And the other half are into it.
Yes, thinking they've been all terribly progressive.
And then I get on to the sex education bit, because we had that this year.
Oh, God, this is and this is where it gets really, really bizarre.
Insane. Now, listener's discretion, because this is explicit, but I know no other way to explain it. And I'm disgusted by it, even saying it out of my own mouth. So the PE teacher, head of department, emails my wife. And I thought that was funny because normally we're both on the emails.
Right.
My wife flicks it on to me and it's about, oh, we're going to have this RSE, was it?
Relationship and Sexuality Education Guidelines.
That's right, RSE, compulsory, you know.
Oh, the guidelines are compulsory.
No, they were very careful how they worded it.
Okay.
But it was compulsory. The word compulsory was in there. And it says, you know, and we're going to cover off this. And I said, oh. So I emailed and said, I'd quite like to know. Oh, I should add, by now I've been along to Penny Marie and Elizabeth Cave's presentation from Kids Be Kids.
Yes, I went to that as well.
So now I'm awake to this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a very nice letter. Oh, I'd quite like to see what's in it. Could you send it through to me? Well, there's a bit of a back and forth because it wasn't straightforward.
What wasn't straightforward?
Telling me what's in the course.
Oh, okay.
Need to get back to me.
I wonder if this is going to go where I think it is. But anyway, carry on.
So eventually I kept hassling. Oh, yeah, I can't share it because it's copyright.
Exactly where I thought it was going to go. Yeah, it's come from inside out or an outside organisation or family Rainbow planning. Youth or something. Oh, family planning, right, yeah.
So it was navigating the journey number 9 for year 9.
Yeah.
So, oh, I could see the slides in the Google Classroom after it's been done. Just the slides. They were saying videos, role play, all the rest of it, right?
Role play?
Yep. Scenarios.
Role play, like the students were going to role play.
They do. Yes, it's in there.
Right.
Exercises. So I get hold of, through much difficulty, I get hold of Navigating the Journey 9 in expense. Oh, my goodness. I don't regard, before I was a Christian, and even now, I don't regard myself as a prude.
Mm.
This is depraved.
What I saw in the Let Kids Be Kids presentation from Penny Marie and Elizabeth, sorry, I can't remember her last name.
Elizabeth Cave.
Cave. I would say that there are definitely elements in there that I could only agree with you on that.
So I'll give you the example, which I write to the headmaster about and the board of trustees, because they have these video links.
Mm-hmm.
I read through it. I couldn't believe how explicit it is. They discuss in class, right? There are scenarios to discuss in class, stuff I can't imagine discussing with you now.
Right. And do they give the excuse that, oh, they can find all this on online and social media anyway? And my argument with that, and I mean, other people may have better arguments, but my argument is that if kids are seeking stuff out surreptitiously, at least they have in their minds, a concept that it's not right or wrong or something like that, you know. So at least they have that. And if they, or not necessarily wrong or right, but just, tread carefully or be cautious, that sort of thing. But if they're having that taught in school, it's like, oh, no, this is all okay.
Well, it goes like this in my mind. They do all these scenarios and they have things, you connect them up, and it's absolutely explicit. If it was outside this classroom, and I don't even know how they get away with it anyway, they'd be arrested.
I'll give you the exact example. Now, if you're upset easily, I apologize.
No, I'm too much of an
old. No, not you. I'm thinking of listeners.
Oh, the listeners.
Yeah. They had a video that covered off for my 13-year-old daughter how to submit to anal sex.
Oh.
How to use protection so she wouldn't catch sexually transmitted disease if she engaged in anal sex.
Oh,
and how to lubricate herself for anal sex so she wouldn't get tearing.
Unbelievable.
A male teacher is presenting it.
Wow. And they see nothing wrong with this.
Well, I'll come to that because I got to make a disclaimer. Because when I kicked up Bobsy Dye over this, oh, no, they're not going to show that video. Right.
Yeah.
So I got to put that caveat in. All the other videos, which I got, were equally as bad. And there wasn't, quote, an anal sex video. It was through two or three of them.
Right. So you can't.
And it was through the
That's
course.
That's what they do, permeate it through everything. Yeah.
And it was all the big hyper focus was on consent.
Okay.
And I realize there's a trick with that.
I was just thinking along those
because
lines.
It's all about, oh, well, if you get consent, it's fine. If it feels good and you agree to it, it's fine. And they have role playing in the classroom recommended from the course about giving consent.
Yeah.
And I think that's to break down the age.
Yes, absolutely. Because they're presenting this video like, oh, this is normal, they're saying.
Yeah.
This is what everyone's does. And then they say, oh, but you've got to give consent. But so this 13-year-old is thinking, oh, well, if it's what everybody does, then yeah, okay. That's consent. Well, it's not really, but it's considered. Enough.
And then there is no it's basically like having ice cream. It's just it's cold, it's nice. There's
nothing.
No emotional discussion.
Yeah.
There's a sort of you can get pregnant. So you've got to wear protection. They in the videos, for example, there's great fun about using condoms and stuff.
Mm.
And lots on oral sex. 13-year-old daughter from a male teacher. Now, I
just don't know what to say. I mean, it is just horrendous.
Now, this is the recommended curriculum for schools from the Ministry of Education. It's not compulsory.
Yeah.
My wife and I were so appalled by this. Yeah, I've actually lost all confidence in the school.
I would think that that's completely warranted as well, Rodney.
Because there's a lack of judgment.
Mm.
Now, thanks to Let Kids Be Kids, and I can't stress this enough, I have been along to their presentations and been to their webpage, and I knew what to do. By the way, if you're a grandparent, if you're a parent, and if you're not sure what's going on in your kid's school, it's this stuff.
Mm.
Because they don't tell you. And it's very, very hard to find out.
Yes, well, I really object to their way of getting resources from outside organisations and then claiming the copyright thing that they can't share it. And that, to me, I think it's a strategy. I think they've hit on a tactic. And I think that they should not be allowed to do that, that if they get sources from outside the school, there should be assigned permission that parents can see it. They should come with permission that parents can see it and not stonewall them with this copyright stuff.
So my next step is to write off to the principal. And I'm very polite. And I say, dear Mr. Principal, please take this as a notice that I want my daughter withdrawn from these classes. Under Section 51 of, I think it's the Training and Education Act 2020. I said, I'm pretty upset because I got the saccharine email about what was going on that didn't bear any relationship to the content.
That picture a template email response to send, it, they, Rodney?
And I said, as an aside, how do you feel about a 13-year-old girl being taught by one of your teachers how to submit to anal sex? That's the one I keep bashing them over the head with. I think that hit him with a bit of force.
Mm-hmm.
And I get an email back acknowledging that my daughter would be excused because, as I said, it's not compulsory. Parliament has made that very plain. None of that's on the email, by the way, to you. It's got the word compulsory through it. And then he said he'd looked into it and that particular video isn't being shown. In a funny way, that upset me more.
Because
removing that video didn't overcome the problem.
No.
Because the whole thing is wrong. The whole ethos, everything about it is wrong. Everything about it is wrong.
Yeah.
The videos aren't subject to copyright. And they were produced by that activist and singer Lizzie Marvely.
Oh, yes.
Using Shortland Street actors, many of whom were part of the LGBT plus group.
Oh, yes. Of course they are.
And they're all young kids who will be in the newspapers with mental health problems, hyping up. Basically, it's cool to have sex and it's cool to do what feels good. And it could be boy on boy, boy on girl, girl on girl. It could be, you could be in the, you know, wrong body, all that stuff, right? So he said, oh, no, that particular video, of which there was two at least, and I'm going to have another look through. But you can find the videos if you've got the stomach for it at the webpage villainies.com.
Villainies, how do you spell that?
Well, I'm thinking it's villainies.com.
Oh, villainies.com, right. Like a villain.
And Lizzie Marvely produced them, paid for no doubt by you and I, and they're under the Real Sex Talk, and there's maybe six or seven or so videos. And you should watch them because they illustrate. Oh, and it's presented by that comedian Guy Williams, the not funny guy.
I don't know who you're talking about. Who?
Oh, he's a nut bar that used to live with Golwes Gamaram, the Green MP.
Right.
So it's all these funky guys, like, who know nothing. Like, come back to me when you've raised six children, have grandchildren, and you know a thing or two about life.
Yeah, yeah.
Not when you're 19 and fed a lot.
And everything
of
sounds good in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you can find those videos, and that's what the schools, the ministry are recommending to schools for 13-year-olds in class.
Now, well, that doesn't bode well.
That's out of the year nine. That's out of the year nine. By the way, just to finish completely the story, wrote to the chair of the chair of the board of trustees. I want to get this off my chest because it just makes me so flabbergasted.
Very
politely, and I said, I just want to check because I had a great deal of trouble and expense to find out what my daughter was going to be taught. And the material includes how to submit to anal sex. Admittedly, and to be fair, they said that bit's not in, but the whole stuff is wrong. Under section 91, you're supposed to consult with the community every 2 years about this material. I'd just like it explained to me when that happened.
Yeah.
Because as far as I'm concerned, the school stands accused of teaching children this stuff without parental consent.
Yeah.
Because you can't give parental consent if you don't know what the material is. And I said, not only that, you can't even find out what the material is because it's quite copyright. I actually thought of writing to the male teacher who was going to be taking the course and say, dear so-and-so, I understand you're going to be teaching my daughter, my 13-year-old daughter, about this stuff and explain what it was graphically. And say, I think we should meet first.
I think you should what first?
Meet.
Oh, meet, yeah.
And you explain that to me.
Okay.
I don't think that would go very well, actually.
I don't think so at all either. They don't want parents involved because parents might put the kibosh on things.
I've never hurt anyone in my life. But if I have a 20-something-year-old teacher explaining how he's going to be teaching this stuff to my 13-year-old daughter, I'm going to be standing between him and my daughter.
Yeah.
With everything I've got.
Yeah, and they don't realise that that's a sentiment of many fathers, absolutely, mothers as well.
Absolutely. They do not know what they've done. People do not know this is happening in our schools.
No. And I think what's happening is the parents are sort of thinking about the sexuality education is kind of along the same lines that they got, maybe a bit more, you know, modernised, that sort of thing. I don't think any of them have any idea of the extent it's gone to, that the inappropriate extent it's gone to. Because I think that, I mean, there's certainly some very good content in the relationships sexuality education guidelines, but they have included this other content that's just totally age inappropriate. Looking back to my own sort of 13-year-old self, I mean, okay, so kids might be more mature, you know, they might mature more quickly now. Girls might mature more quickly, like mentally and emotionally, I'm not sure, but I would have thought that was absolutely yuck, vile, disgusting at 13. Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I just kind of made,
Oh, you wouldn't be interested.
I don't think I would have. I can remember. Don't want to get too explicit
You're 30 years younger than me. But
I'm what?
30 years younger than me.
Okay, well, we'll go with that, Rodney.
I'm older than I look. Generations have figured it out, haven't they? And they have figured it out with their loved ones.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you do.
And they can figure out consent. Now, we've got a problem because of social media. And it's an active job as parents to keep that in check. But it doesn't change the destruction of our kids' innocence.
No, I'm fully aware that it's hard for parents to be on top of everything their kids are doing. You know, kids can be hellishly sneaky and devious about doing things they want to do that they know their parents will disapprove of. So, you know, I can understand how it can be a long time before parents can be aware, actually aware of what their kids are doing or what they're accessing.
Oh, boy. That is true. But it doesn't excuse the school.
No, the school, it's intentional, and that is what is unforgivable. Is they're actually putting this intentional age inappropriate stuff onto, as a burden, you know, onto 13-year-olds. I mean, especially girls. Just from my own experience, excuse me, I can remember when I hated puberty. And I don't know of many girls who love it, but some may sail through it. But I hated puberty. But somewhere between the age of 15 and 16, I mentally and emotionally grew into what my body was doing. Yes. And then things became easier, you know. But at 13, no, I would. That's just my experience. I would have thought that was all. The things I'm seeing, which I've seen in these guidelines, I would have thought were not quite revolting at 13.
And it's setting them up for mental health issues.
Yes.
It's setting them up for a series of failed relationships.
Hmm. Because the expectations, I think, they're being presented to them is that this is all, like, normal. This is all good stuff. And then if it doesn't measure up to that, well, yeah, maybe it's the other person's fault.
It's all cool. Start, you know, when you are ready, you give your consent and it's all go.
Hmm. I mean, we all know
there's no virtue. There's no teaching of character. There's no teaching of temperance. There's no teaching of modesty. There's no teaching of decorum. There's no teaching of being chaste. There's no teaching of what it is to be a woman and to be a wife and to be a mother and to provide for your children. There's no teaching of what it is to be a boy. There's no teaching of what it is to be a man. There's no teaching of respect.
You didn't put chaste in there, Rodney.
And chaste. No, for sure. I do.
Yeah.
On both sides. Because foregoing pleasure is important. I'm not saying this is how you should live to anyone. But the idea that you abandon yourself to your everyday desires is clearly wrong.
But there is certainly a case for delayed gratification, isn't yeah. there, as opposed to instant gratification. I don't thinking about my youth, I don't want to sort of preach too much to younger people now about what they should and shouldn't do. But I do know that if we women, especially women, girls, get taught how to stand up against coercion. That's the big thing, is getting coerced into doing sexual things that they don't like, or even just having sex that they don't particularly want to have. And I don't know, I mean, we get taught about consent, you've got to consent and everything like that, but how do you recognise coercion and stand up against that? That's sort of a big thing. Or, and it's the not just the coercion of maybe you know, a man on you who's not been violent, but you know, he's pushing, yeah, and also the social coercion in a way, you know, to if you decide that you're not going to be sexually permissive or whatever, there's a social coercion, like, oh, well, you're just being a prude, you're this, you're that, and the next thing. That's all very valid stuff. And how do you teach, you know, I don't hear of girls being taught how to recognize coercion, the various forms of coercion, and how to stand up against it if they want to.
I think you're wrong.
I'm wrong?
Yeah. Because I think, funnily enough, this course is drenched in that. And I think it's its own form of coercion.
Oh, sorry. So we might be talking about other things. I'm saying that the course is actually sort of a coercion, and I'm saying we're not teaching girls how to recognize coercion.
That's funnily enough, the door through which they run the horse. So they're big on what is the definition of coercion, and you're not to be coerced and all the rest of it, right? You have to give your consent. And they give examples which you're to discuss, right?
Mm-hmm.
Explicit examples. And then the girls say, oh, I don't feel like this. And then in class you discuss, oh, is this coercion? But my point would be, if you endlessly talk about giving consent and what is coercion, you're coercing girls or shepherding girls and boys into early consent.
Well, I can see that. Although I'll still hold with that it's important to teach about what coercion looks like, the various forms of coercion.
But don't we know this if we're brought up? Like, I never had sex education at school.
And I had limited sex education too.
And it was fine. We were very excited in our biology textbook in the fifth form because it had a section on mammalian reproduction.
Yes.
And then a section on humans. And we'd all read the human stuff.
Yeah.
And it was about reproduction, by the way.
Right. So not about sexual identities.
No,
gender identity.
It was about,
yeah,
you know, how a baby is born. But that was titillating enough.
Yeah.
Our lovely dear teacher, we spend a lot of time on the rabbit.
What does
so
that
much
mean?
On how rabbits reproduce.
Right.
And we spent so much time on how rabbits reproduce, we ran out of time.
Or to talk about how humans reproduce.
Yeah. And the dear teacher closed the book and said, and humans are the same. I loved that.
I don't remember having much of it.
Sort of like, and humans are the same. Bang.
Bang.
And like we were 15 and 16, we'd figured that stuff out, not by doing it, but by reading. But we knew because we had respect for women and each other and ourselves. We knew what consent was. We didn't hyperventilate and discuss it endlessly in class. Oh, so this man's got his pants down and you're holding his thing and then you put it in your mouth. This is an example. And he's done it before many times, but this time you think, no, I'm not going to do this. Is that okay to say no? What is that shit even being discussed with a 13-year-old?
Yeah.
Because yeah, no, to me, that's right. Breaking down. That's breaking down their mental barrier to this. That is normalizing this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I have to agree that it is. That's my whole
problem with it. That they're talking, oh, well, we're just teaching girls yes and no and what that means, and they're endlessly going over and over and over it until a girl's natural, I'm not ready for this, or it's a bit yucky, goes. We're drenching them in this stuff.
She doesn't actually feel that she can say no, really, in the end, because, as you say, it's so normalized, gets talked about, gets getting so normalized that in the end, she often doesn't feel that she can, even though she technically is allowed to, she often doesn't feel that she can say no.
No, and it's actually, to be honest, when I was in high school, having sex wasn't an option.
No, I mean,
it was not a thing. You just weren't allowed. It was forbidden.
I think that looking back at my sort of high school years, I would have liked if there'd been a bit more sex education in it, but not what we're talking about now. I just wouldn't have been mentally and emotionally prepared for that, or ready for that. As I said, it was sort of somewhere between the age of 15 and 16 that I found that, you know, I started sort of getting that mental and emotional maturity.
Yeah.
Started developing, but not at 13. But I find that this is, as you say, it's just this whole thing about getting to kids younger and younger.
By the way, I have an older boy who's 35, and when he was at high school, he went to a boys' private school, and when they had the equivalent of sex education, they invited the parents along, and it was an evening. And it was a little uncomfortable at the start, right, the thought of it. But they had a professional lady come in, and she was absolutely fantastic.
Right.
Now, let's think about that. That's 20 years ago.
So there was no Shortland Street actors. I mean, Shortland Street was around 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So no Shortland Street actors or Inside Out,
no.
Neo Rainbow Lobby groups.
No.
No,
and
okay.
No secrecy.
An actual professional.
No secrecy. You were there. And that's actually was pretty good, because you sort of felt you had to have this discussion with your son, but you weren't quite sure about how to go about it, or your daughter. But you'd go along, and that would achieve the result, right? Yeah. And you were there, you were a part of it. Now, would our friend, the male teacher that was going to be teaching this stuff to my daughter, would he have me in the room?
Well, I think that before, when you're talking about that, I thought to myself, now what if you asked if you could be present when this is being taught? I wonder what they would say.
Yeah. They'd say no. They know. They know. I think they'd know that a father would get physical. That is, I have never, ever got physical with anyone in my life, ever.
But this could be the hill that you die on.
Oh, no, not could be, would be.
Would be.
I know myself.
Yeah.
If I had a guy dressed up in a woman, as a woman, try and enter where my girl was getting changed, it would get physical.
Well, I wish more fathers would think like that.
I would get
Rodney.
My daughter away if I could, to safety, and avoid any physical confrontation. This is so basic. And the idea of a male teacher getting up and talking about this stuff to my daughter, I regard it as criminal grooming.
It's quite gross, really, isn't it? Certainly on the surface of how you're describing it, it sounds quite gross. And I'm just really dismayed how many parents and fathers seem to think that this is just sort of, modern, this is progressive. And if you object to it, they call you the names, you know, you're bigger.
Oh, yeah.
Prude has always been around as a shaming name.
Yeah. Transphobe.
Yeah, yeah, all that sort of thing. And it's
dinosaur.
Our own council would rather have adult men in changing rooms with young girls than tell adult men that they're not women. That is just how brainwashed they are about it. I'll tell you just another small story. The Christchurch City Council recently implemented an equity and inclusion policy, which they would not put the word sex in. So there's basically, that gives them an out. They only have gender in it, apart with other categories. So not to have sex in it gives them an out to not have to need to apply, you know, S46, you know, protection of single sex spaces. And it seems to me, and on this panel, this group of three councillors who were doing this, there was this youngish man, Maori man, and he had, this is public information, he had married a Muslim woman and converted to Islam and had a small daughter, and he still does not see anything wrong with having policies that allow any man free and unfettered access to all women's and girls' spaces or in council venues, you know, just upon the mere declaration that they are a woman. So if someone sat down to him and explained it to him in minute detail what this actually means, he would probably be might be a bit horrified. But they're completely brainwashed by lobby groups, the rainbow lobby groups that come in, or the neo-rainbow lobby groups, I call them, who come in and tell them this stuff. They want evidence. The councils want evidence that there's a problem with men who say they're women coming into women's spaces. I mean, you know, this is 5 minutes old, so, you know, what kind of evidence do we have? People who experience this, they're too afraid to actually to come forward with their names and
for good reason.
Detail, yeah.
For good reason they're afraid.
Yeah, so they want evidence. Whereas the men who say they're women, I don't think they had to give a scrap of evidence about why they didn't want to be in men's spaces and insisted they needed to be in women's spaces, apart from the fact that they felt that they wanted to be, that it was, you know, based on their feelings. And we're supposed to supply evidence that men and women's spaces is not a good thing. And doesn't matter what they call themselves, it's not a good thing.
It's a paedophile's charter.
The policies, you could drive a truck through them.
So I'm a paedophile.
Loose and open.
If I'm a paedophile, right?
You're in. All you
have
to say is you're a woman.
I just walk into the woman's toilet saying I'm a girl. I'm a woman. I walk into the girls' toilets.
We teach girls, you know, safeguarding and how to look after themselves and stuff like that, and then it all flies out the window as soon as a man says he's a woman. Oh, no, then you have to sort of forget everything you've been told and accept that. It's just so wrong, you know. I just can't believe it. And I say that they do not see it. They won't. Well, when I say they do not see it, they won't see it. They refuse to see it.
Is there a breakdown between men and women?
Looking back on my own younger life, Rodney, is that, and I only speak for myself, I wanted what men had. I wanted that freedom that men had. And the only models for that freedom were men. So you did what, you know, basically, you know, tried to do what I tried to do. And I'm not alone. There's a lot of women like this who tried to do what men did and, you know, have the lives that men have and stuff like that. Now, I know if the woman listening to this, they might say, oh, I didn't, but this was how it was for a lot of us, is that the only role models we had for what freedom looked like and being your own person basically were men. And, you know, for getting into the workforce, how you behaved in the workforce and things like that.
Can I be provocative?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
You were brainwashed.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's right.
We all were.
Yeah.
We all were.
We didn't know, you know, I mean, it was early days. We had no roadmap for it or no role models. That was just how it was. And so what's happening, of course.
You were brought up to be your own woman, to the worst thing you could be, in fact, it'd be a failure, would be to be a housewife with children.
Yeah, for myself, I never wanted that anyway. So that was, I sort of stay away from that discussion because I wasn't really wired for that sort of thing. I chose not to have children. It just wasn't, as I said, the wiring just wasn't there for some reason. What I was going to say is that we're sort of finding out now that doing things the way we did isn't the best thing for women.
No.
So what does that look like now? What does it look like?
We started blurring the distinction between a man and a woman.
Yes. Yeah. And I think we have to go back to really understanding that very, very distinct and still equal, but very distinct.
Yes. It's a funny thing, isn't it? Because critical gender theory has brought this into sharp relief.
Well, I think that's one thing it's done.
Because you either, once you see critical gender theory, you realize that feminism was a Trojan horse, that feminism had a great goal, a great point to make, wonderful stuff, but lurking underneath it was an ideological position. It's like this to me now. If you're a communist, you don't try and sell communism. You sell workers' rights.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And everyone thinks, yeah, the workers should be paid more. Yeah, the workers should have more days off. The workers should have this. The workers should have that.
Mm.
Wonderful stuff. But underneath it is a dark force. Feminism, well, women can do anything that a man can do. Women should be able to choose to do whatever they choose to do. They shouldn't be shunted off to nursing because they'll make great doctors. Yada, 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 yada. All good stuff. A woman shouldn't have to get married. Shouldn't have to have children. She could choose career.
And I was grateful for that myself.
Yes. And all of that is good stuff.
Mm.
But lurking underneath it is a gender critical theory that predates this, which is we're going to destroy the very concept of man and woman.
I think that the blurring of sex started that. Yes. Yeah.
It goes back, right, to before you were born. Because David Bowie and Mick Jagger, they presented this feminine vibe, Alice Cooper.
I remember David Bowie and Mick Jagger.
No, you've seen old clips.
No. I was there in the day.
Your vegan lifestyle has been very kind to you.
I've probably got good filters on Zoom.
yeah, mine are a bit rough. But you know what I mean? I love David Bowie when I was like at high school. And he'd dress up in makeup and I used to think, what the hell's going on? And he had skinny arms and he'd be useless at carting hay or rounding sheep up or fixing your car.
But they still never said they were women.
No, but he's what I aspired to. I was always annoyed because I was chunky. And I wanted to be a skinny little effeminate guy like David Bowie because that's who the girls liked when I was a kid. The Mick Jaggers, these skinny little girly men.
They were, yes. Mm.
But no, he never said he's a woman.
Mm.
But of course, that's where we are now.
Yeah, that if you are a bit effeminate and you you're sort of not this typical sort of masculine guy, then, you must be actually be a woman. I know, it's gone. It's, you know, like men.
What are you must have been dealing with trans reading time in the public libraries.
Say that again.
Trans folk wanting to read to kids in our public libraries.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Have you had that interaction with your council?
I haven't bothered, to be honest, Rodney. They have had them here and I haven't bothered. Sometimes you just
pick your fight.
Yeah, you pick your fights and sometimes you just get exhausted with all that's going on because it's so embedded. We've been caught on the hop. This is so embedded now in councils and libraries and every, you know, government organisation that it's such hard work fighting it all. And, of course, you know,
and
we
corporates.
Corporates, yes. We don't have, you know, we haven't got, at the moment, haven't got the resources, haven't got the people. There are a lot of people who are concerned, but there's not that many people who will actually join forces with you to do something, to put themselves out there, their voices, their names and things like that. And a lot of them, you know, they have got jobs they've got to protect, you know, and so they can't do it. Some of them have families who are round on them if they do it. You know,
but
like
we've become
maybe
cowards,
people.
Haven't we?
Yes, and I was saying that
process.
I don't admire those people, but I understand where they're coming from. If I was in a position where I was going to lose my job, if I spoke out about it, I might stay quiet as well. You know, and I might be that coward. So that I understand.
No, I get that, and I say the same, but we only need 10 heroes in Christchurch and we'd all get behind them. Or one hero. You know what I mean?
Well, we might get a few because the Women's Rights Party.
Heroism is infectious. And it's when you see one, like J.K. Rowling has changed the debate through sheer bravery and guts.
Yes, yeah. And because she had, you know, so much money behind her, they couldn't cancel her.
But, yeah. I mean, it can't have been much fun for her.
No, it definitely isn't. I mean, from what I've heard her say, I mean, she doesn't say much about it, but from what I've heard her say is that it is, you know, the death and rape threats are constant, you know, against her and her family.
She has to have security.
Yeah.
They tried to de-publish her books.
Mm. Most successful. But if I can just say this thing too, that talking about people getting together and sort of joining forces and meeting each other and doing that at in-person sort of events is a great way to do it. And one thing that's coming up that may help with that is that, you know, have you heard of Sal Groder from Australia?
Yes, I have. I love her.
She's coming to New Zealand.
Oh, wonderful.
In early July, and she's going to have talks. So the Women's Rights Party either organise it or co-organising it, and she's going to give a talk in Auckland, I think Tauranga, I'm not 100% sure about that, Auckland, let's just say Tauranga, but I could be wrong, Wellington and Christchurch. So that may be a chance for people to come along and sort of meet other like-minded women and men and perhaps, you know, like join together.
She's magnificent.
She is. She's great. I mean, I follow her on X and she's such a wordsmith. The answers she comes back with to people are wonderful.
Tell listeners her story and why she's got famous in Australia.
Oh, okay. So Sal is an Australian woman who decided to create an app just for women, and she called it Tickle, or Tickle, as the Aussies say, and purely for women, and it was just for anything. I think it was in anything app, but it wasn't just a dating app or anything like that. It was like finding flatmates as well, or just meeting up with people in your area or other women in your area. And this man who says he's a woman and he calls himself Roxy Tickle tried to get on the app, and because this is what all these men who say they're women are, all want to get onto women's apps, tried to get on there. He was discovered and removed, got his nose out of joint about it, and has recently taken her to court over it to try and try and sort of get some sort of ruling that, you know, men who say the woman can get onto women's apps, you know, even if they're privately owned apps.
And the court case is so great because it's Tickle versus Tickle.
Tickle versus Giggle.
Yeah, Giggle, that's right.
I know.
And
a
then
great
the
name.
Other great aspect of it, which makes it so delightful, is her name is Sal, S-A-L.
S-A-L-L, actually.
S-A-L-L. Mm-hmm. What's your last name?
Grover.
G-R-O-V-E-R, Sal, yes. Grover. And she's this very elegant, beautiful woman.
And she is, yes.
She's a picture of her would just sell a newspaper, right? She's just so elegant and so wonderful. Mm-hmm. And this other character, Giggle, he's a bloody fright. You know, he's an ugly man with a bit of makeup on and a skirt.
Yeah.
And he looks horrific. Yeah. And you see these two pictures, this guy trying to pretend he's a woman.
Mm.
Oh, my goodness. How do we find out about her presentations?
I should imagine. So I just recently received a newsletter from the Women's Rights Party yesterday, sort of giving a few details, but I imagine that their website would give more. They would promote it more on there.
Were you a part of Women's Rights Party?
I'm a member, paid up member. Yeah, I'm not involved in the organising, you know, in the
okay.
team or anything like that. But I'm helping to organise the event in Christchurch. But that's the extent of it.
Are you worried
about
the safety of the event?
I'm not. For myself, I'm not worried. And I don't believe that where the event is going to be held, which I won't say just yet what it is, but it is a what we used to call like a working men's club.
Yep.
It is in that. I don't think that they will back down either.
Because the experience of councils cancelling events.
Councils are hopeless. Councils are a bunch of cowards. Yeah, just.
And then the Posey Parker with the media and the police allowing women to be attacked brutally by men and encouraging it, justifying it, excusing it, and then the police case standing by.
Yeah, that really was a horrific occasion. And the reason why, you know, Posey Parker has her Let Women Speak events in like public arenas like parks and stuff is because anywhere she tries to book any venue inside venue, they cancel her because the trans thugs or the trans advocates and the trans thugs start getting onto the venue and, you know, basically threatening them with, you know, like violence in a way. You know, they're not going to attack the venue, but they're going to be outside. They're going to be outside and make problems, you know.
But you see again, right?
They cancel. The inflection point, let me just talk about this. Yeah. The inflection point event in Wellington a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
The cafe closed down in solidarity with trans people because of the event. I mean, I'm just astounded, you know, how can a business do that? But they do. And
so you're a policeman, right? A policeman. I emphasize man. You're a policeman. And you're brave because you've signed up to put yourself in harm's way to protect.
Without fear or favour, I might say.
To protect people. People unknown to you.
Mm.
And you've signed up to that. And the police force from the top down stood on the sidelines while a grandmother was punched.
Yeah. And to be honest, I don't know if the police on the ground were very happy with that. I don't know. They followed orders.
Doesn't matter to me. They're gutless. I honestly think you actually have to ask yourself, forget your salary, forget your mortgage. What sort of man are you?
Yeah.
And if you're still a policeman, if you're still a policeman, you're as guilty as the policeman that stood by.
Mm. I don't envy them their position on that day. I don't excuse them, but I don't envy the position that they were put into by giving that order not to intervene, not to help.
And I'm that way with the teachers.
Yeah.
Like, I got a mortgage. Yeah. So?
Yeah.
What's right? What's wrong? What? These are little kids.
Mm. Well, I can't pretend it would be an easy decision to make. So I don't judge.
I don't think that is. I think it is easy.
For me, it's easy. I don't know about other people. Yeah.
Because, well, ask yourself this. We never know what we would do unless we're confronted with the decision at that point.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know what we'd actually do sitting in a trench on the Somme, right? But you know what you'd like to think you would do.
Mm. Yes, you'd like to think you'd be the hero.
Well, you're in occupied Holland. Do you hide the Jews?
Mm.
You'd like to think you would.
Yeah.
You wouldn't like to think you'd be the person that says, they're down there at the Frank's house. Mm. Take them and let my child stay in school or let me win some favour.
Mm.
Because maybe this is how I was brought up, but there's worse things than dying.
Well, I think that's food for thought, that's for sure. Is living with yourself afterwards worse than dying? Yes. We have our instinct to survive, so that's quite a hard thing to fight against. But anyway.
Oh, yes. But you see, that's where principles and morals kick in. Mm. And they're there to stop your instinct. So you're on the Titanic going down, and they say women and children first. Well, your entire instinct is to jump into the life raft.
Mm.
But you wouldn't.
No, I think,
because you're,
I think you're right. Like, for example, like as an older woman myself, if it was like basically, you know, mothers and children first type of thing, yeah. As you say, I would really want to it's jump in that line.
You wouldn't even, but it's not your instinct, but it's what it is to be a human. And I thought, this is how I'm so naive. I am so naive. I expected, following the election last year, for an older teacher, female, to be sitting in the common room and to look around the common room and say out loud, I don't know about anyone else, but I think it's, I'm going to swear because I expected they'd feel this strongly. I think this men can, boys can be girls is bullshit.
100%.
Clearly no one did.
No.
And in our schools, we were exactly the same place as when Jacinda Ardern left office. Nothing
Did you say since Jacinda Ardern left office?
That's right, nothing's changed.
No.
A whole new government comes in, a supposedly conservative government. Teachers now could speak out in the classroom, in the common room. They could speak out in the media. They could speak out with parents. Nope. You know why? They agree with it.
Oh, yeah. That's a sad thing to hear, that's for sure.
Well, that's where I got to. Same in the council, right?
Yeah. Absolutely infested with it.
Same in the ANZ Bank. Same in the Air New Zealand. They're infested with it. The Minister of Education and Christopher Luxon could end this today.
Christopher Luxon, yes. Well, he seems to think that people were on the a different planet if they cared about bathrooms, didn't he?
I know.
And
I know.
You know, it's an interesting, and you know, I've heard Erica Stanford say similar things, like, oh, when I'm out and about, people aren't talking to me about this. And, I mean, they've all had, you know, it's actually not true, you know, that they, not true they don't know, because they certainly have had people talking to them and emailing them. When they were out and about on the election campaign trail, maybe, I'm not sure, maybe they didn't. But the fact of the matter is, that because people aren't talking to them about it does not mean to say that it's not being talked about and that it's not an issue. But it's an excuse, you know, or no one's talking to me about that, so therefore I don't know about it.
I've had funny interactions with people. I had a dear friend say to me, he was in a position to change sports policy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote him a respectful letter. And he came back and said, look, if it's an issue, the girls should just refuse to play.
It's not fair, isn't it? All put back on the girls.
I
All
know.
Put back on the women and girls, you know.
I know.
This policy? Yeah. This policy is about men. Yeah.
Yeah.
And about men. And we have to deal with it.
You read the story of Riley Gaines.
Yes.
And what they put those girls through
mm.
was worse than anything you would read about
mm.
when the Red Guard were rampaging through communist China.
Well, obviously this will implode eventually, but there's a way to go yet.
Do you think it will?
Yes, I do. I mean, it's not things never go back to the way they were, but it will implode because it's nuts and because there are no boundaries to it. So it'll just get more and more mental as it progresses. So, and that will eventually be its demise. And then, you know, well, people will read back on it and be astounded that all this happened and that nobody said anything and that people were so brainwashed and bought into, you know, brainwashed by it and bought into it. But
Do you allow the possibility that it could be terminal?
Say that again. I've allowed the possibility to be terminal.
Do you think it could be terminal for society? Like we don't get out of it?
Well, I find that difficult. I think we will. And I look to communism and how communism was the same. There were no boundaries to it.
Yes.
You know, it just sort of got worse and worse and more corrupt and everything like that. It's like capitalism, you know, we understand where capitalism can go. And so rules have been put in place. Now they get broken, we know that, you know, but rules get put in place and boundaries and measures so that to try and contain it. But with communism, there was none of that. It was just, you know, like this free for all, and it was just this expansive thing that just grew and grew and just went mental. And I don't think that humans have the capacity for that much self-discipline in a general rule. They need rules and values kind of imposed in a lot of ways. If you just rely on your own self-discipline, there will be so many who just don't have that. And that's where communism went. In the end, it just became unsustainable. And that's where gender ideology will go.
You've got a new mayor in Christchurch.
Yeah.
Major,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I used to tell you my age, I guess it would be his uncle, Ivan Major.
He used to live down the road from us, or his family did.
Great man. Before I wanted to be David Bowie, I wanted to be Ivan Major.
Well, let me tell you, he doesn't care about the issue of men and women's spaces.
Well, I'm going to come to that because Ivan Major was, of course, the great world speedway champion on his motorbike. So what's this new
Phil Major is the mayor, not Ivan
Phil
Major.
Now, Phil Major, where's he at on this issue?
Yeah, he doesn't care. No, he doesn't.
Now, how is that possible? He's a man.
He doesn't want to know. You know, he does not want to know because I have emailed him and got a reply back from his office, not from him, from his office, to say, oh, this is a operational matter.
What?
So he doesn't want to know. Yeah.
Is the lobby that powerful or has he got the mind virus?
I think a lot of it is just doesn't see the importance of it. The other thing is like, you know, oh, the busy thing, and it's interesting, like, what these councillors find themselves too busy for and what they don't find themselves too busy for. I mean, I would expect, you know, like things like rainbow crossings they don't find themselves too busy for.
At some point, let's deal with this. It seems to me we're being very frank about things for listeners. I think at some point, sadly, a young girl is going to be raped, underage, in a woman's changing area by a man who's gone into that changing area presenting as a woman.
And this is one of the cruxes of it, is that they have gone from proactive safeguarding to reactive safeguarding. So basically, they want something to happen first before they will actually sort of put any safeguarding measures in place.
But this is obvious, right? This is what's going to happen.
It's obvious to so many people. And do you know what their answer is? Is that basically, they will deal with that when it happens, when and if it happens.
So when it happens, there's going to be an outcry, you would hope. And if our media, God knows if we have to rely on them, are going to point out that this paedophile, this rapist, was in the toilet woman's toilet, woman's changing area, because Phil Major said as an operational issue, he could be.
Mm. Left it into the hands of the operations department of the council.
So there's a culpability.
Couldn't be bothered with it.
There's a culpability.
Yeah.
Where they put a young girl into a position where she was undressing.
You're quite right, Rodney. There's a culpability at the level of the mayor.
Yeah. There's a culpability there of allowing, telling a young girl that she's safe, this is her changing area, and having it as policy that all a paedophile needs to do is to say they're a woman and they can walk in and watch.
Mm.
The urges get the better of them and the girl is attacked.
Mm. And before that happens, there could be any amount of incidences.
That's right.
Which go unreported and stuff like that, which make women sort of women and girls not want to actually sort of have, you know, fulfilling public lives because of the places they decide that they can no longer go. So even if a woman or a girl never encounters a man in her space in her life, at this point in time, the control of those spaces has been put into the hands of men because of the fact that any man, any man at all, can say he's a woman and go into those spaces. And whilst not every man will do that, the choice is his, whether he does or not. So the control has been put in the hands of men.
My girls won't go to the toilet at school.
I've heard so many stories about that. Yeah.
And I notice I've never said a thing. I'm very careful. I know not to scare children.
Mm.
But I notice they change before they go to the swimming pool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another burden for women to carry, or women
they
and girls
do not
to carry.
Feel safe in a woman's space by instinct.
Mm. And that's right. They should be able to go into a woman's space and know absolutely, within all the bounds of reason and possibility, that is their space, their sanctuary, where they'll be okay. And now they can't.
And that every adult
will protect them.
Will protect that space for them.
Mm. And not tell them that they are the ones who are wrong for being upset that there's a man in there.
And the adults are sitting there saying, we're inclusive, come on in.
Yeah. The adults aren't adulting.
And in the case of our local mayor, he's campaigning on it. Look at me. We're inclusive. Oh, does that include women's only spaces? I've noted your comment.
Yeah.
This is where I got to, and I think
it's not important enough for them, Rodney, until there is actually an assault, a rape, or something like that. It just isn't important enough for them.
Even with the Posey Parker attack, that was framed by the media beforehand and afterward in a massive minimizing way.
Oh, look, I don't know if they could say her name and the expression anti-trans and this, you know, they couldn't.
Nazi.
Appeared in the same sentence all the time. They did not have, you know, couldn't possibly, or an article. They could not possibly make one article about her without those slurs in it. They just didn't.
So I can imagine the rape that we just described not being explained away, but not sheeted home. So there'd be this dreadful outpouring. How dare this man do this?
Mm.
He's got to be locked up and we'll throw away the key.
Oh, but we're not going to stop all other men doing it, though.
No. And how dare he present himself as a beautiful trans woman who would only exude love and care.
I don't call them trans women, because as soon as you put the word woman in there, it starts giving a false impression. Yeah.
They're men.
And you know, no other men who say they're women would do this. It's only just this one or just a small minority.
That's everything right. I know. That, it would be explained away.
Yeah.
And Phil Manger would say,
"Oh, I didn't know about it.
We're going to redouble our efforts to keep our girls safe because nothing's more important. Are you going to still let men in? Yeah,
because we're inclusive. We're an inclusive council. Yeah.
That beats. So we've had strange things when you read the UK papers of, there was an amazing one where it was written up that two women were raped in the women's ward of a hospital.
Yes.
By another woman, quote.
Yes. Oh. I know.
And they've explained that away as like, oh, yeah. Or in the prisons there's been rapes. So
prisons are an interesting one, aren't they? Yes, and
that's the most terrifying thing, because a woman is locked up.
I have some heavers. Did you read on my Substack the story of a woman prison officer? She told me a story about that. Yes.
Please share that with us.
Yeah, I'll flick it to you by email.
No, share it with us, with listeners.
Oh, okay. I beg your pardon. So, she's no longer in the prison service, but she worked in the women's prison for, I think it was about 10 years. And she had to, they got in a man who said he was a woman, and she had to do, although those days I think they were quite strict at when they went outside the prison, when they came back and they were all sort of searched, you know, because you have to search them to make sure they haven't brought in any illicit goods or stolen goods or anything like that. And so she had to search this man. You don't touch them, but, you know, she had to search this man who's naked. And she did say that, you know, she started developing, you know, problems with that. But I encourage people perhaps to go, rather than me sort of, there's quite a lot of detail in it. So rather than me sort of talk about it all now, perhaps they could just go and read it on my Substack.
Tell us where your blog is again.
Right, it's on Substack, and it's A Bold Woman, as in B'OLD. And I write on, you know, matters around gender ideology in New Zealand for the most part. Sometimes I touch on overseas matters. And when I started it, I thought I would write one blog every 2 or 3 weeks or something like that. And I was just astounded at how much in the end there was to write about. So I put something out quite regularly. But the prisons, this is an interesting thing to contemplate, is there's a legislation that says that prisoners should be searched by someone of the same sex. The prison, Corrections New Zealand have their own policy saying something about the prisoner can choose the gender or that, something like that. And what I'm seeing now is we get these legislations and we get these government departments or councils that override it with their own policies. And it's quite astounding, really.
Yeah. We're talking with Katrina Biggs. She's a campaigner for women's rights. Do you feel brave, Katrina?
Brave? I've learned to be. When I started out, I wasn't, you know, I was quite timid, I think, like a lot of women, but I felt quite, you know, tried to be reasonable and everything, but you know, you just, in the end, you've got to take a stand. And I tell you, the women of Manawahini Kuriro, I mean, they inspired me quite a lot. They don't take any nonsense.
I love it, right? Because it does take bravery, but then I think we're at the point where we have no choice. It's not a,
I think, to me now,
me speaking out isn't being brave. It's just a necessity.
Just and my only
judgment and hesitation is, I don't know quite how to do it in a way that's not perceived as an attack on the teachers concerned, the teachers as a whole, the school and schools as a whole. I don't, you struggle because you're calling out their behavior, and I can't understand their behavior. Like, I would have thought if I was the headmaster and got my letter, I would have fired a note back within 5 minutes saying, if you're right, this is over tomorrow.
Yeah.
This isn't happening at my school.
Yeah.
It's like Phil Major, the mayor.
Mm.
You'd expect to write to him and say, hey, you got men coming into my daughter's changing area. What's up?
Mm.
And you'd expect him to be ringing you and saying, I can promise you, Mr. Hyde, that's not going to happen on my watch.
Yeah.
Like, but when you get back, that's an operational issue. That's a bit like being a Nazi, right? No, you can't make Nazi comparisons, so I won't. But you can't excuse shocking behavior and declare it an operational issue when you're the guy in charge.
Yeah.
There's no, he's mayor to deal with this stuff, and he can.
Mm.
And he can. This isn't an operational thing about, oh, your rubbish didn't get picked up on Monday.
Right, no.
This is an operational thing about whether the girls and women of Christchurch are safe in the council-owned facilities that are women's changing sheds and toilets.
Mm. And he's passed the buck.
And these loons that are in the operational department should either man up and take a stand or resign and say, I'm too disgusted.
And then the other thing they say, Rodney, is that, we have individual changing cubicles as well. So if you go into a communal changing area and a man is in there, then, and you don't like it, then you, the woman or girl, has to be the one who leaves and goes to the individual changing cubicle.
Look, I'm a big fan of Brian Tamaki. Huge fan.
Yeah.
Because that's what men do.
Yeah. Well, I can't deny that he's done some good work with men.
And he's got the men prepared to do what's necessary to protect our kids.
Yeah.
And I'd bloody like his men to be backing me up with any guy trying to get into my daughter's changing space.
I can only agree.
Because I would lay down my life to stop it. And I think it would come to that because, you know, I'm an older guy now. Still wouldn't have stopped me.
Yeah. Mm.
And I might just be a bit ready for action. You know what I mean? I'd grab something.
Yeah, well, there's no retirement for us, Rodney.
There's no retirement.
all us older people have had to come back into the fray.
Yeah, because the under 40-year-olds are brought up with it.
Yeah.
They refuse to
see anything wrong with it. Refuse. Yeah.
They're like my daughter saying, they know nothing different. Mm. Katrina Biggs, it's been wonderful talking to you. We sort of did an interview, but I had to tell my story because
it was good to hear, Rodney.
Oh, it's burning in my soul.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. I hope a lot of other people hear it too.
And I tell you, it's happening in their school. They just don't realize it. It's happening in your school. It is happening in your kids. It's happening in your grandkids' school. It's happening in your kids' school. It is happening. You do not. 50% of schools are using the material I described.
Yeah. That's a lot of kids.
It's a lot of kids. And there's a funny thing that I learned from the Let the Kids Be Kids presentation. There's this endless questioning of identity and sexuality. Isn't just about the kids that may end up going onto puberty blockers. It's every kid.
Yes.
Every kid is being psychologically stripped of identity.
Absolutely.
And they're being reduced to seeing everything in terms of identity and race.
Yeah.
And there's no character. There's no belief in themselves, no building of self-respect or resilience. So they don't know who they are.
Their foundations are being stripped away.
These poor girls who are going through the toughest period of their life, well ill-equipped not to deal with it because you're young, are having this adult rubbish driven into them by those whom we entrust with their care.
Yes.
This makes the paedophile priests look, you can't make the comparison. But this is state-sanctioned. In all schools.
It's another avenue for paedophiles.
Well, what is a teacher thinking? What are they thinking when they're doing this? Aren't they on the way?
Well, like, I'd love to know. I don't think they are thinking much, which is the problem.
Oh, you're so kind to them.
Well, I have a lot more thoughts in my head about that, but I won't express them all.
I forgive them because I've learnt to forgiveness, but I will call out their behaviour. Yes. I haven't finished with my local school.
Oh, good.
And I'm waiting to hear back. I think it's been a month.
Oh, well, I shall look forward to listening to the ongoing saga.
Yeah. We will have you back, Katrina Biggs. I've loved talking to you, probably too much. I'll get a whole lot of emails and texts saying I talk too much, but I wanted to get it off my chest with you and you had wanted to interview me.
I'm glad people could hear it.
Katrina, thank you for being on our show. You're on Rally Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Send us a text at 2057. Email us inbox@radleycheck.radio. And in my view, they have our children. Thank you so much for listening.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.